Okay, like we said at the beginning, we are a speaker meeting this evening. We have a main speaker who's going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with, and at which point the meeting will be open for sharing. So I'm going to hand you over to Hilma Ray, who's going to introduce our speaker this evening. So over to you, Hilma Ray.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I'm an addict. My name is Hilma Ray. Hi,
Hi,
everyone.
Maria.
Hello. And my word, it's an absolute privilege and honor to introduce this person tonight. And next month, June, I will have known this person for 26 years. And I would have known him for 26 years, and always I love listening to you. I love the passion that you share about NA. I know how much it means to you. I know how you live your life. And I remember when we first met in meeting by mail, which was my first home group, and I was living in South Africa. And I used to send me share tapes and I would listen to. And when I came over to England, the birds that you had, falcons, and my mum used to always call you the owl man. So, Dale, it is such a great honor to be asked to introduce you to doing the share for us. And I hand over to you to come and share your experience, strength, and hope with all of us. Thank you very much. Dell, over to you.
Thanks, Hilmarie.
Thanks, Hilmarie.
Thanks,
Welcome,
Delmarie.
Dale.
Thank you, Hilmarie. My name's Dale. I'm an addict.
Hi, Dale.
Hi,
Hi,
Dale.
Dan. Hi, Dale.
No, thank you,
Hi,
God.
Dale.
Thank you, God, for a day clean. And yeah, I'm just going to reflect on that, a day clean. And, my clean date is the 1st of May, 1997. That's when I came to NA. I got clean, I stayed clean, and I got a copy of the basic text, and I'd been to a few meetings and I sat and listened to the people in the meetings, and I started to read the basic text, and in one of the preambles it said, "This book is dedicated to informing every addict that just for today you never have to use again." Not only did I read it, but I actually believed it as well. What I found out, because it's like, what am I going to share about? Because it said when I got here, we're not interested in how much you used, who your connections were, how much or how little you have, what you've done in the past, but only in what you it, your problem and what and how we can help. What do I want to do about it? So that just brings me straight into step one. Nobody needs to know anything about me. The similarities and not the differences will become very evident in what I say and what I think and what I feel. And the events in my life. And I came to NA and I started to read the basic text, and I read the first step. We admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. And we've sort of like some study and some readings and listening in the meetings, I came to realize that addiction was much more than just the use of drugs. And of course I hear these people in the meetings, it's just as an observation, they go, "It's not really about the drugs anymore." Let me tell you, it will always be about the drugs, because that's where I go. It will always be about drugs or suicide or a way out. And if it was just about the drugs, I'd just put the drugs down, and that'd be that, and I'd just sail off into the sunset and everything would be fine. And it wasn't like that when I got clean. I came to realize it was a much bigger problem. And The first bit, you know, when I the very first bit of honesty that I ever had when it came to these meetings was when I sat down in a meeting and I said, "My name is Dale and I'm an addict." You know, and it was an admission in public or, you know, to myself or whatever, a recognition that I carried within me the disease of addiction. And the first step, that tiny bit of the first step that concerns itself with like obsessive compulsive insane drug use, is the only bit of this program that nobody can help me with. You know, it says in step one, when we concede to our innermost selves that we, you know, we cannot use successfully. I mean, what does that even mean, successfully? Like a couple of non-addicts got a really successful use up. You know, that we couldn't use drugs, and we can see, you know, and I knew inside, I knew, and I think about it. We have that moment of silence at the beginning of the meeting, yeah. And, you know, I think, and I'd say, we remember why we're here and still suffering. And I remember, like it was yesterday, I remember the smell, I remember the fear, I remember the anger, the resentment, the filth, the fucking sat in my own blood. You know, and I remember that, and I don't paint this up like it's, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have one on the beach or whatever. You know, it was disgusting, it was subhuman, it was degrading, it was a cunning enemy of life, it was jails, institutions, and death, and it was just boring. I haven't got words for it. You know, the basic text describes this illness as a destructive, violent force. And, you know, it's killed a lot of people that were my friends and a lot of people in NA. And someone is just about to die from it now, as I say this next sentence. So it's, I don't. I was really glad that I stopped using. I was so grateful. Because that was all I wanted. I didn't know what I wanted in life, but I knew what I didn't want. And I didn't want that anymore. I didn't want all that hurting people and hurting myself and that relentless pursuit of nothing. And, you know, this whole thing about drugs and I hear people say, you know, I really enjoy drugs. Well, I didn't. Not once. Now I know what they are. And that, but it's a state of drug-induced sort of like mood that it wasn't real, it wasn't based in reality. Of course, at the time, you know, I thought it was cool and it felt, you know, and it sort of like felt good, inverted commas. But it didn't really. It was false. It wasn't, you know, it was fake. But what it did do, it stopped me being me. It stopped this voice in my head that sort of like, you shit, you this, you that, you there's no point. Nobody likes you. Don't ask her out because you're ugly and all on what, you know, whatever it was saying on any given day. You know, and I started to realize it in NA about the disease of addiction. And it says in, you know, who is an addict or why we're here, I can't remember. Many of us considered ourselves addicts long before we picked up, and I was able to look back on it and see that, you know, I carried within me the disease of addiction right from being a child, and all my memories that were, and experiences were all fear-based. They were all based in sort of like that what I later became to understand as defects of character: fear, low self-worth, self-righteousness, attention-seeking, whatever they are, whether, you know, defects or shortcomings, it doesn't matter at this point. I came to realize, and that's what I carried within me. So, you know, I picked the drugs up and quieted down for a little bit, and sort of like had some meaning and purpose and what I considered to be an identity, albeit completely fabricated. And then, of course, you know, the drugs stopped working, and I was a candidate for Narcotics Anonymous. I wanted to stop many years before I did. You know, I didn't use for a great deal of time. You know, I used, well, I did. It was a long time, but by some standards of what I hear in here, but you know, this is my story. I used for 12 years. And there was a couple of periods in amongst that where I could pick up, put down, chop, change, swap for different things, you know, whatever. And then, you know, I was just 30 years old and I got clean. And I remember being, having some money, and rare occasion I had some money, you know, plenty enough to buy some drugs and to probably have a day off of doing what I had to do. I couldn't even be bothered to go and buy some drugs. I just thought to myself, you know, there was something inside me going, this is over, this is finished. I'll never forget that sort of like feeling. Oh, only in desperation did we ask ourselves, could it be the drugs? And, you know, just going back to the beginning, and that's how I ended up in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Made a decision somewhere along the line. I chopped and changed. I went to a few different fellowships. I thought I had 12 steps in it, and they were all the same thing, but they're not. So, you know, I've got an opportunity to say something now. Narcotics Anonymous is a distinct fellowship in its own right. We're not affiliated with AA, CA, anything with an A in it has got nothing to do with us whatsoever. And I think that's really important. And I think it's really important that we don't bring that stuff into to NA meetings, you know, like clean and sober and bridge to normal living and a million other things that come from other places that get into our language and our program and, you know, make it really difficult for us to keep our message precise and clear, which is what I heard when I got here. You know, our first steps as we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, you know, and alcohol is a drug. So when we say clean and sober, it's like saying clean and clean. Drink and drugs is like saying drugs and drugs. It's a drug. So if anybody, you know, hears that, please, it's just, anyway, don't do anything. But I'm just saying something about it now because, you know, it took some guys, to our predecessors, to police this thing in it, to lead us in a way by lead by example and not by sort of like dictating or censoring or telling people, you know, whatever. So that's why this worked for me. The first step was all encompassing. We admitted we were powerless over our addiction, our lives had become unmanageable. For me, the practical unmanageability was the only thing I could see. And you know, later on, I've come to realize that there's an inner unmanageability that sort of like manifests itself in other ways and stuff. So basically, you know, that is my understanding of the first step, you know, that destructive, violent power that just jumps in uninvited. I can't stop it. It comes from nowhere. It goes, gah, 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 gah. And then in the next breath, it's sort of like talking really soothing and manipulative and insidious and, you know, trying to set me up and put traps in front of us and stuff like that. You know, so it was quite frightening to realize about the disease of addiction, but you know, that's just one step. There's 12 of them. And you know, the second step is that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So, what, you know, what does that even mean? I couldn't even, you know, it was just like a complete humbly God, this, that, defects, conscious contact, meditation. What the fuck? But when someone said a power greater than yourself, it can just be somebody pointing out that something that you can't see initially. And what I came to realize is, and again, you know, just as an observation of what other people say in meetings, and they go, when I was using, I didn't give an XYZ about this and that, but do you know what? I did. And I felt it in my gut. Every time I compromised my principles, every time I lied, I cheated, I stole, I manipulated, particularly when I got found out, you know, I felt shame and I felt shit and I felt it. But and I had that little voice inside me going, don't do it. It doesn't have to be like this. You have to, you know, and I could never ever empower it. I could never get through, but it was there. It was what I now know to be my spirit. It was now known to be the voice of my higher power. I could, you know, I could never even, you know, occasionally, you know, wasn't all bad. You know, there were some things that really did rise above this addiction in my using, you know, because I'm human and I've got a spirit. And but it was like this constant thing till eventually, you know, like it says in step two, I just, you know, eventually Mr. Hyde died and Dr. Jekyll died and Mr. Hyde took over. And that, you know, that's what happened. And you know, I could never ever empower that little voice in me. I could never tell the truth because I was so frightened of what people would think or what would happen if I did. And I got to NA and I heard people sharing, hopefully, like I'm sharing now. And you know, that sort of like empowered that little voice in me that, you know, the dark voice of addiction is going, you're not going to say anything, blowing smoke, you're this, you're that, and you did this 20 years ago, and nobody likes you. And you know, if anybody knew that about you, then this, and you know, all the other stuff that it relentless sort of like negativity that it throws at us, and misinformation. So, what happened? Was I started to be empowered by the voice, the quiet voice, and you know, and the evidence of the quiet voice was all around me. The people in the meetings who, you know, who had a month clean, who had 6 months clean, who had a year clean. Some people had 3, 4, 5 years clean. It was a very young fellowship at the time. Remember, this is 1997. You know, there wasn't a lot of meetings and a lot of experience, more importantly. Hilmary spoke about the meeting by mail, and it was the loner staying clean in isolation. You've probably seen the pamphlet. I picked it up because I thought, brilliant, I'll be able to do this on my own and not even speak to anybody. But it turned out it was sort of like information about the meeting by mail, which how it used to work was the you would write into the World Service Office in a letter, and everybody did this, and then they would compile it into like a pamphlet and send it out to the group, send it out to the members, individual members, and people's addresses were in there, so you could share into the meeting or you could share around it to individual members. You know, again, we didn't have the internet then. Very few people even have mobile phones. I'm sounding like a right granddad here, but that's how it was, and we did what it took to stay clean. But the point being is we were a very inexperienced fellowship, and as a result of that, I was able to sort of like connect with people in America and people who were traveling the world and people who had a lot of clean time and a lot of experience in NA and a lot of stuff around the steps and the traditions and the meetings. And they started to send me cassettes. See, again, this is years ago. I bet these people in this meeting don't even know what cassette. Anyway, cassettes. They used to send me cassettes, and then they'd send me bumper stickers and stuff from various conventions, and I started to I got like a jump start, really, of sort of like how NA worked through their experience. And what used to happen where I lived was people would get 2 years clean, and they'd go to AA because there was nobody to sponsor them. We didn't have that experience. We didn't have the to do it. You know, we had two meetings a week, and around that time, 2 years. You know, I'd already made a commitment to NA, but a few other people did that, and we started to get a bit of clean time together. We started to get a bit of experience. We started to do some service and things, and we stuck around. And when I left that area after 14 years, we had three prison meetings. We had a meeting in the probation. We had a meeting in a treatment centre. We were on about our 11th convention. We had our own helpline, and we were doing a prison link up for the closing share. And most importantly, you could have a sponsor with 6, 8, 10, and in my case, 14 years clean. You know, so from small acorns grow large trees. And I often think about those guys who were doing all that stuff, you know, years and years ago, and they had nothing. They didn't even know what they were doing, bless them. They were just bumbling the way. They had some, you know, they had nothing, and they were finding their feet, and they were, you know, struggling. And this and that, and excuse me. And I often think about them, and I think about them during the readings and all the literature, which is sort of like quite polished. A lot of the older stuff, I mean, sort of the stuff I read, you know, the basic text is reasonably polished, and but it wasn't always like that. Wasn't always like that, and you know, I'm really, really grateful. I had cause to be. I was at the 50th anniversary of Narcotics Anonymous in 2003. We were formed in 1953, and we had this link up again. It was sort of like, you know, it's all done on a phone. I don't even know how they did it, but they linked it up, and it was the 50th anniversary, and there was a convention going on somewhere. I think it might be in America, it might have even been in San Diego, I'm not sure. But and then all this stuff started coming in, all these different people, and they're saying, is there anyone from Peru? And they're going, Buenos días, blah, 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 blah. And then somebody else had come in from China, and then somebody else, and then they do the serenity. And I just got this feeling of fucking hell. You know, this is big, this is powerful, this is something else, you know. And yeah, really, really grasped sort of like what it was. I was involved in a power greater than myself. Think I've sort of like gone on enough about step two, really. But step three, you know, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand. What does that even mean? Well, initially, it was just like, you know, I'll just do the opposite of what my head tells me to do. So it said, go to the meeting. Don't go to the meeting. So I go to the meeting. He said, don't phone your sponsor. I've got a sponsor by this time. I thought, is that sponsorship? I phoned someone else. I said, what is a sponsor? I thought they give you money, but they don't. And this, you know, and he just explained it was just another recovering addict with a little bit more experience who could, you know, perhaps share something, whatever. I read the sponsorship pamphlet as well, and I got a bit more information about it from there. But initially, so it was, you know, I just did the opposite of what my head told me to do, and I started to wash up at the meetings, and I started to clean, put the chairs out, and I started to give my phone number, and I just started to do good things in life, and that was it. You know, I got a couple of years clean. I got 2.5 years clean, and then I started to feel these feelings of anger and resentment that I just couldn't put my finger on. And my sponsor said, I'm just walking to the other side of the room to get my teapot. Addicted to cups of tea these days. And I phoned my sponsor and I explained what I was feeling. And he said, want to look at doing an inventory. He said, you know how you feel. I said, you know what happened. He said, why don't you try something different? So I was terrified about it, but I did it anyway. Can you just bear with me? I've not got my computer plugged into the battery. I live in a tent, me, so I'm just come undone. I don't want to get cut off halfway through. Right, we're back on. Thank you, God. Power greater than myself. And I completely forgot where I was. Can someone just remind me, please, where I was?
You're talking to your sponsor about doing something different.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah. So I was terrified up to, you know, up until this point. You know, I'd read the steps. I'd had them all on tape. I used to listen to them all the time in the car, so I didn't have to listen to myself. And you know, he suggested I did a fourth step, so I did it from the working step four in Narcotics Anonymous, and you know, it was really, really painful to write it down. I didn't want to do it. I tried to, you know, I was thinking about an easier way. I asked my sponsor, could I share it with him instead? Because I didn't really want to share it with my sponsor. But then in the end, you know, I just got some courage from somewhere, and I did it. And I did half of it, and it just got too much for me, and I couldn't handle it. And I had to call it off. But then the following week, I completed the fifth step. You know, I admitted to myself, to another human being, and to the God of my understanding, the exact nature of my wrongs. And something shifted. You know, I didn't get this pink cloud that people talk about. I didn't get that. But something happened, something. I felt a serenity, I felt relief, I felt something moved, and all became a lot clearer, who and what I was and what I carried, and the disease of addiction and how that manifested itself, you know. And it was so obvious. It was almost like somebody drew some curtains open, and on one side was all the spiritual principles, and on the other side was all the defective addiction stuff. You know, and I could see it very, very clearly what was what. And one of the set things, I'm just going to jump back to the second step, because when it got to step six, you know, it says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So I didn't even know what these defects of character were. But in the second step, it says in It Works How and Why, and this is one of the biggest things for me, even to this day, is that it says that we're talking about a higher power. And then it says, after all, who can logically explain the sudden lifting of an obsession to use drugs? And I just think, where did that go? When I was thinking about the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, live to use to live, you know, and every waking moment was about drugs, and that went. And it's like, now I've got some money in my pocket. How am I even sat here? How am I even sat here doing this, you know? So if I had any inkling that there wasn't a power greater than myself, I only have to look at that, because nothing was going to stop me using nothing. And you know, I went to the bitter ends with it. And so what happened was, with the sixth step, is I came to realize that I couldn't remove all that defective thinking, like, that had been entrenched in me. I couldn't remove that on my own, in the same way that I ran off to foreign countries or tried to change my living arrangements to get rid of the voice, the obsession to use drugs. I just couldn't use that. I just couldn't lose it. And it was like, I believe that step six is a surrender to the disease of addiction, in the same way that we surrendered to the disease of to the drugs in step one, when I absolutely had enough of myself. Am I ready? Entirely is a massive word for an addict. And you know, and that ended up with me on my knees crying and just asking God for some help and my higher power, you know, whatever that is. Changed over the years. It's become something very different. And I reserve the right to change it in 5 minutes' time if I want. And that's how it works for me. You know, humbly asked it, you know, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So what's the de I under my understanding of a defect of character is the thinking. You have a powerful, uninvited thought that comes in. And the shortcoming is acting on that. So, you know, initially it would have been being very rude to people, or doing this or doing that or whatever, you know, very, very overt things that people could see, and that I could, you know, they were the shortcomings, you know, timekeeping, this, that, you know, there's a, how long, you know, it's just. But then what I came to realize is, years and years and years later, my shortcomings are based on what I don't do. I don't tell the truth about myself. I'm frightened, you know. So fear, the defect of character is fear. You know, don't let people in. Why? Because I don't feel like I'm worth it. So it's low self-worth. I haven't even done anything. There's nothing going on outside. Nobody even knows about this stuff. So my defects of character and shortcomings have changed. You know, maybe that's where we get to the sort of like nuts and bolts of it. But it says, you know, we glimpse a vision of complete freedom in the seventh step. And well, not a cure by any means. And I, you know, I glimpsed freedom. And you know, I remember being on this. I was on this beach in England, and I just finally, like, after I'd done my fifth step, I went out and got checked out for all these blood-borne diseases that I thought I had, and I was terrified. In fact, I even had £1,000 put to one side. So if it did come back that I had them, I was just going to finish it. I was so frightened because of the stigma and stuff that was attached to these illnesses. And it's not like that now. But after I'd done the fifth step, I told my sponsor, I shared this in my fifth step, and my sponsor said, I said, I'll go and get it checked out when I find some peace. He said, you'll never find any peace with that going on. So I went and got checked out, and thank you God, I was all right. And I remember being on the on this beach, and I was looking out, and the sun was setting, and I just wanted to cry, and I couldn't, and I could feel it was stuck in my throat, and it was a lifetime's worth of pain and resentment, and fear, and this and that, and I just heard this little quiet voice, and he just said, nobody will know. And I just burst into tears, and it was like this pressure valve was just released, and I must have cried. I don't even know how long I cried. I just cried till I just couldn't cry anymore, and everything came out. My mum, my dad, me, all the people that had hurt, all the wrongs I'd done, all the wrongs everybody else had done, just everything. It's just this cleansing thing that it just. Like, can I even put my finger on it? And I just had this sense of hope and freedom that, it could, that I could be free, really. Keep a check on the time. So I'd love to share about the traditions as well, but I'm not going to have time. So step eight, we made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So yeah, that's all right, being free as a bird and having all that cleansing and all that spirituality. But you know what? There was a trial of wreckage behind me that I couldn't have, I wouldn't have been serene for very long with what I'd done and what I'd said and how I'd been. So, and particularly to myself, it says in, we did many people great harm, but most of all we harmed ourselves. And I got the brunt of it. I hurt some people, and sad to say, and that's what happened. But I got me 24 hours a day, and the disease of addiction, it picked me up and wiped the floor with me. And so I had to make some amends to myself, and that started by going to the meetings, by having a bath, by doing some just very, very simple things, by going to, just doing. Part of my third step, I keep bobbing back between the steps, but part of the third step is like, one of the questions I'd ask myself is, what would God do? Well, he'd have a bath, wouldn't he? God would just go and have a bath, and then he'd sort of like cook himself something decent, not some shit like from the chip shop. Chip shops are fish and chip shops for anyone who's not in the UK. Chippies, we call them. But I would eat well, and I would try and sort of like do things differently, really. And it was a chance to sort of like what I found when I did the eighth step was I actually was in other people's shoes. I was thinking like, how would I feel if someone had done that to me? And all the sorries were nothing. I truly was sorry, but I couldn't say it, and I didn't want to say it. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to re restore what I could, make reparations. I wanted to put things right as best I could. Obviously, you can do what's done, and then so I go on to the ninth step, and it sounds like I'm just doing these, and Monday I did the eighth step, and Tuesday it's ongoing. It's been ongoing. The ninth step is about making direct amends, except when to do so would injure them or others, others being myself. I'm not going about to start confessing to loads of shit that's going to cause problems for me and cause problems for other people. Some people are still hurting from the burn of my misdeeds, years and years later, possibly. I've got an ex-girlfriend. She will not speak to me. It's 30, 28 years ago. No, it's even longer. It's even longer since I last spoke to her. 35 years. She won't speak to me. If I saw her, am I willing to make amends? You know what I am, yeah. It's all in the past, it's done. And I'd like her to be happy and have a bit of peace as well. So it's been an ongoing thing. responsible, you know, and a lot of my mentors have been in direct and mentors, responsible, productive members of society. That's what scared the shit out of me when I got here. I thought I'd have to pay taxes and get a job and all that sort of stuff when I got here. And I have to be really responsible and pay rent and that. But anyway, I've done none of that. I followed my heart, me. I'm an old traveler and I went off on the road and I went living life and I went everywhere and I did it. But that's by the by. But as a responsible, productive member of society, you know, Narcotics Anonymous could be considered a society. So, you know, I'm responsible and productive in here and the way that sort of I attempt to carry myself in the world. And so, you know, I make my amends directly and indirectly as well, you know, particularly when it comes to carrying the message to other people, because you know that I'll get to that bit in step 12, but you know, step 10, we continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong from the admitting. The most life-saving thing I've heard in this program is what it says in the 10th step in the basic text, and it says we often find we've been doing better than we've been feeling. And it was such a relief to read that. And there's been so many times when I've been absolutely insane between the ears and hating everyone and hostile, resentful, self-seeking, angry, all this different stuff. And yet I've been handing my phone number over to a newcomer. I used to have them on little slips of paper and it had my name and it used to say, don't file it, dial it. Or don't sling it, ring it, or don't lose it, use it. You never knew which one you were going to get. But I've had people come up to me years later and say, I remember you, and you gave me that phone number. And, you know, I remember being 15 years clean. My dad had just died. My girlfriend had just left. Found someone else and she got pregnant within a matter of minutes, weeks, days, months, I don't know. I was absolutely powerless, depressed, fed up. Everything had gone wrong. And she was in the fellowship as well. And I went to a convention and I was sat outside this convention and I just had my head in my hands and I'm really paranoid. I'm thinking everybody's taking her side. And they all know all about, you know, all this stuff, the intimate stuff that we shared. Everybody knew. And this guy came up to me and he said, are you Dale? And I said, yeah. And he said, when he went to his very first meeting, he said, you gave me a copy of the basic text. He said, you gave me 40 cigarettes. He said, you gave me your phone number. And he said, well, I've been looking for you for 10 years to say thank you. Whew. We don't know what we're doing here. We don't know. We plant a seed and then we walk away. And then years later, you know, we get the fruit of it. You know, I love that thing in the basic text of the full fruit of a labor of love lies in the harvest, you know, and that comes at its right. I can't quote it word for word. I used to be able to, yeah, the full fruit of the labor of love. And, you know, we get this stuff back. You carried the message to me. And I didn't, you know, I didn't carry the message to me. And I was in bits. And I got it, you know, I just went, oh, I get it, I get it. And that's what we do in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we save lives. I've got no time for anybody that bitches or gossips or does this or does that. I've got, you know, I'm really trying my best to keep it on track. This clear, precise message that an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. You know, it says it twice in the basic text, you know, and I did. I've swallowed a couple of copies of the basic text over the years. You know, we have never seen an addict who lives the NA program use. It says it twice, once in we do recover and once in recovery and relapse. Worded slightly different, but it's not important. And, you know, step 10 is just keeping a track on it. And And our assets and liabilities were revealed to us, it says, you know, and it's like, look at all the good stuff. I sort of like lost my chain of thought, really, but it was going on about sort of like we're often doing better than we've been feeling. I'm on a roll now. I was terrified when I started. God's sort of like coming through me, I feel. And we find we're doing, no, I've said that. Right, I'm just going to breathe. Just breathe. Thank you. Yeah, it's getting a bit faster and a bit manic. Yeah, so step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood it. So what is prayer and meditation? You know, I got this sort of like stereotypical view that prayer is with our hands together and meditation is sort of like cross-legged and breathing and mindfulness and all that, which indeed it is. It's a part of it. But what I came to discover in the 11th step was that prayer is the outward expression of the spirit, you know, and that is song, that is poetry, that is a prayer, that is a smile, that is tears, that is anything that is the outward expression of the spirit. And meditation is the calmness and the serenity and the insight and the mindfulness to receive what's coming back. There's so much, it's just so powerful. I cannot even start. I keep my mouth shut me about the stuff I've achieved in recovery, but I've yet to meet, it doesn't matter. It's just out of this world. The things I've done and a higher power's will for me, you know, and it wasn't to be sat on the street, as I said, in my own blood and piss and stench, you know, and it isn't for any of us. And you know the people in NA, you said, you know, you can get clean, you can stay clean. And I believed them and I followed them and I did what they said. And I had a spiritual awakening, you know, as a result of these steps, I had a spiritual awakening. And you know, was that on the Wednesday, you know, step one, two? No, it's been an ongoing thing. The first thing of a spiritual awakening, I remember being able to smell bread. I walked past the bakers and smelled like, wow. That's brilliant. And then I remember sort of like these little things. I remember somebody telling me a joke. I was 30 years clean. I had a laughing fit. You know, the drugs didn't kill me, but the joke very nearly did. And I had lots and lots of different spiritual awakenings that incrementally till. So, you know, and I'm still having them, still having them, still having the spiritual awakenings. I'm still experiencing truth. I'm still experiencing, I'm still on the road. I'm still on this journey. 28, this is year 29. I'm still on this journey. I'm still with you lot. You know, I'm still doing it. And I want to finish on this because I'm aware I'm sort of like going on a bit, but I ain't got any secrets. There is no secrets. And I've just kept coming back. And I ain't used no matter what. And I stayed clean when it didn't make any sense to. And I just put one foot in front of the other. And I always remember something it says, and it works how and why. It says about the first step, the last paragraph on the first step, it says, wonderful events will be mixed with painful ones. We will experience a whole range of feelings about the events in our lives. And that's what's happened to me. You know, I've experienced joy like I've never, ever felt. And I've experienced powerlessness and despair. And I've cried a river and I've laughed. I can't find an adjective that, you know, I've just laughed, you know. And I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you for listening.